Coming up today, emoji equality, where Theresa May stands on the environment, surveillance and drugs, we visit Farnborough Airshow, and why is everyone so addicted to Pokemon Go? You're listening to episode 276 of the Wired UK podcast, your weekly guide to the best of science, tech, ideas, business and design. I'm your host, James Templeton, and joining me are Emily Reynolds.
Hi.
Matt Reynolds.
Hello.
Matt Burgess.
Hello.
And Victoria Wollaston.
Hello.
All of us. We're all here to mourn Emily's last ever Wired UK podcast. Sad times.
Very sad.
You can sniff and use your hay fever.
Oh, am I meant to be crying?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't think I am able to muster that much fake emotion.
I'm crying on the inside.
Yeah. Vicky, you probably had the most interesting week of any of us. You went to Farnborough Airshow, which kind of does what it says on the tin. Mm-hmm. It's in Farnborough and there are planes.
So I spent the day with BAE Systems. I got to see their Stryker 2 helmet. It comes with a head-mounted display, so it's worn by fighter pilots in the Eurofighter Typhoon, and it shows all sorts of information like altitude and route and targets. It comes with night vision built in, so pilots can ditch those heavy night vision goggles.
Should come with the caveat that it's cool technology, but this is being used to target.
This is defence technology. This is really serious, high-end military fighter pilots.
Killing stuff.
Yeah, so, and I mean, it's got eye tracking in it, so it helps the pilots fire at targets more accurately. So there's an infrared pod on the underside of the jet that's completely moved and controlled just using the pilot's eyes. So I also got to take part in a flight simulator.
Like a real one.
I did crash. The company uses it to, they don't just use it to train their pilots, they also use it to test out any future sort of cockpit technology that they want to trial. It actually reminded me quite a lot of the old school simulator on the Krypton Factor. If any of you remember that.
Some people in this room might be too young to remember the Krypton Factor.
I'm definitely too young. I want to throw that out there.
That's not... You're lying, Burgess. But what was quite cool is it's not just defence technology that they had on display. BAE is investing a lot in sort of sports technology. It had a treadmill for wheelchairs, which I'd never really considered before, but disabled athletes obviously need to train in the same way that regular athletes do. So the treadmill itself has... fittings on the back which can increase the elevation, for example, or resistance to actually help the wheelchair users train for the Olympics or the Paralympics. But what was also quite cool is that they had a bone conducting helmet.
Now what does that mean?
So it was originally used by soldiers. Ben Ainslie's actually going to be using it next week in the America's Cup. What it does is it lets the wearer ditch earpieces, so you don't need headphones for it, you don't need anything like that. It transmits sound waves actually through your skull.
So this is proper futuristic stuff.
Well, that's the thing, it's not... Yes, it is, but when you actually break it down, it's actually quite a simple technology. It's just using the bone, it's just conducting the waves through the bone.
So through the bones in your ear?
Yeah. So it sort of bypasses your ear passage and it does it straight through your forehead. And as a demonstration, I had the helmet on and they were playing just music. So you can hear everything that everyone's talking about, so that from a safety point of view, you can still communicate with other people. But in terms of the music, no one else could hear it. And that absolutely blew my mind.
It looks like Matt Reynolds' mind has been blown. You look a mix of mortified and astonished.
And does it sound just like this is normal headphones? You know, it's going straight in your ears and it all sounds as good as normal sound quality.
Well, it's not going in your ears. You can hear it, but it's not going in your ears, which is crazy. What's so interesting about it is that it's slightly tinny, so I don't think it'll ever take off in terms of proper headphone makers are going to start using bone conducting technology, although there are some headphones you can buy that do it, because it's just a bit tinny. But the whole point is meant to be that you can still hear when you're walking around or communicate with your team, especially when in the soldiers, they can still hear if an enemy is approaching without having to have heavy headphones on.
So maybe there is someone listening to the podcast right now wearing bone conducting headphone things. If so, hello.
Hello.
We are inside your brain. Matt Burgess, what did you learn this week?
I've learned this week that the US Marines have a 32-page long guide for tattoos.
Okay. And so what tattoos you're allowed?
Yeah, basically what tattoos you're allowed. So the regulations say that they can have tattoos pretty much anywhere on their body as long as they're not on their head, neck, hands, elbows or knees. And there's a slightly more complex bit as well. You can only have one tattoo on the lower arm or leg. It can't be bigger than the size of a Marine's hand unless the tattoo is a band that wraps around the whole limb. So it's pretty tight guidelines.
I cannot join the US Marines, which is
a life ambition.
A shocking quote to me now.
That's terrible.
And the document is 32 pages, but one to drive a tank is 88 pages.
Okay, yeah. So they got the priorities kind of right, although you'd imagine tattoos were slightly less complicated. Who should we go to next? Emily.
Okay, I'm going to get people to guess. It's a guessing one. But Matt Reynolds is not allowed to guess because he already knows the answer because he sits next to me. So he's not allowed to guess. I learned this week how long it takes for a red blood cell to make a complete circuit of your body. Please guess how much it is.
Matt, you can go first.
12 minutes.
I will go for 8 minutes. Vicky?
4 minutes.
It's actually 30 seconds.
30 seconds.
Wow.
That's pretty fast.
It's super fast.
Nothing really to add there. Matt Reynolds, what did you learn this week?
So I learned about the world's most popular constructed language. It's called Esperanto, and basically it's made up from a mix of Spanish, Latin and Greek. And really, if you speak any kind of European language, you'd probably be able to recognise it. What's cool, it was designed completely, you know, from the ground up in 1887 by a Polish ophthalmologist. So like an eye doctor, he said, I'm just going to make my own language. And now, yeah, there's 2 million people speak it worldwide.
But not really.
No, but I would say, go and read it. Go and look at a passage of Esperanto. And obviously, I just talk English, you know, rubbish at any other language. But you can actually read it and recognise it without knowing any of the individual words. It's very peculiar, but quite amazing.
You didn't bring a passage to speak.
No, I didn't. It was a weird one about kind of a dragon and stuff. And I thought that was just quite an odd thing to read out. So I didn't bring it in.
Okay, so we're going to be talking about Pokemon Go later. But I have a Pokemon quiz, not a fact.
Oh, God.
All right, everyone ready?
Here we go.
Is this a real Pokemon?
I've never played Pokemon.
Or a made-up Pokemon?
I'm at a disadvantage here.
Okay, so it's best of five.
Okay.
Okay, so the first one is Charyupine.
That's fake. That's fake.
That's 100% fake.
That is not fake, real.
Fake.
I'm going to say real.
It's fake. It's got the word peen in it. It's not real.
It's fake. That is of my own imagination.
No way. Which says something deeply disturbing about you, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Next up, Wallatone.
I'm going to say that's real.
Real?
I think fake.
I'm going fake as well.
I think real. It sounds plausible.
That is also of my own imagination. Yep. Yeah, I know. I'm not keeping score here, so I hope someone is.
Is this what you do for fun?
Yes. Yes, it is. Obviously. Bronzong.
These are all fake, aren't they?
Bronzong.
This quiz is all fake Pokemon.
Bronzong.
It's fake.
I'm going to say real.
That's a silly name. I'm saying fake.
100% fake.
Fake.
Matt Reynolds, I'd expect you to get this right. As Wired's resident Pokemon master, Bronzong is a real steel psychic Pokemon. Come on.
Bronzong.
Right.
I think I'm winning.
Yeah, there's two more, and then I'll end the pain. Tangrowth.
If that's real, then they really got lazy with the names, because that's...
Okay.
I'm going to say real.
Real, yeah.
Real.
It's real, because I had one.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I'm going to have to go real as well, then.
You did have one, and do you remember what type it was?
Oh, God, I made that up. I didn't actually have one.
It's a grass-type Pokemon. Final one, Potatoed.
Oh, that's so cute.
Potatoed.
Yeah, that's real.
Yeah, real.
No, it's fake.
I want it to be real.
Me too.
It's fake.
It's real in my heart.
Fake. It's what my own brain made up as I sat at my desk about half an hour ago. So I hope we all enjoyed that. And from Pokemon to Emoji, we finally got to our first story of the week. It takes a while to do facts when there's five of us. Emily, emojis are getting a bit more diverse.
So we talked about this before, back in May, when a group of Google employees worked on a project to create some professional women emoji. So if you don't remember or you didn't hear the podcast, they wanted to combine existing emoji that would increase the range of professions that women were depicted in emoji form.
So this is instead of just sassy lady, dancing lady.
Yeah, they're all of those ones, the woman doing her nails, etc. They wanted to have a farmer, a businesswoman, a doctor, etc., etc. And now Unicode, who obviously make all the emoji, they've announced that they're going to incorporate the changes into their update.
So hurrah, hooray. This is all really, really good news.
It is great.
But not everyone is completely happy. Why is that?
No. Well, this week I talked to the disability charity Scope, and they've done some research into disability and emoji. And they told me at the moment the only disability-related emoji is a wheelchair user sign, which they said is often used to just denote accessible toilets, which is not very representative.
Yep.
And even though there's going to be an Olympic-themed update, so there's like more sports and there's medals and stuff, there's no Paralympic recognition, so they're
which is kind of a bit of a miss.
Slightly miffed about it, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to open this up to the group. Does this actually matter? Does emoji equality matter? Is it that important?
I have opinions on this.
Go ahead. You go first.
I'll go first. Well, I think that people might say that it's kind of superficial or facile, but I think just so many people use emoji now. I think like almost all of us use emoji. It's nice for people who are disabled, who, you know, like they've depicted people with prosthetic limbs and in wheelchairs, and equally with women, for girls who are using emoji to kind of see increased representation. Like, I don't think it's going to win the fight for feminism or disability rights, but it's nice for people to feel represented.
And when you have an emoji for an aubergine and a poo, you should probably have someone
in a wheelchair or a woman that's a doctor or something like that.
Yeah. Anyone else? Don't all rush at once. Vicky, you're looming towards the microphone.
But all I was going to say is that there's not even an emoji for redheaded people. So aside from the gender issues and the disability issues, there's a lot of people with red hair. Emily Reynolds is one of them.
She does have red hair, confirm.
I do have red hair.
Yep, yep. You guys don't really have an opinion, do you?
They're men, so they don't care about women. Well, women's diversity in emoji.
I'm pro emoji diversity, but I feel that I wouldn't really be adding anything to Emily's eloquent
reasoning. Thank you so much, Matt.
So that's my silence.
Well, we'll move on. Our second story this week is about Theresa May. Just to get you all up to date on British politics, if you're not from the UK, we now have a new Prime Minister. Former Home Secretary Theresa May has taken over from David Cameron. So, Matt Burgess, with your unending love of Theresa May and all things security and privacy, you've spent a good part of this week looking at her past record on some key topics for Wired. So, off you go.
Before she became the Prime Minister this week, Theresa May was the Home Secretary, which means that she was in charge of the police and a load of other different organisations and a lot of home affairs. And she'd been in that role for the last 6 years, which makes her the longest Home Secretary in the last 100 years, which is pretty impressive for anybody. So she's got the credentials there to become Prime Minister. And since she started the job as the Prime Minister, she has completely replaced the cabinet. So the old boys club of George Osborne, Michael Gove, David Cameron, they've all gone. They don't exist in ministerial roles anymore, and during the last 6 years we looked at her ministerial voting record, and there's been some controversial points.
Yeah, and a big part of that, as Home Secretary, she really tried to push through something that we call the Snoopers Charter, or the Draft Investigatory the Draft Communications Data Bill, which used to be called the Draft Investigatory Powers Bill or something like that. It's had lots of names over the years, but this is basically the powers that the government should have to look at our communications and our data.
Yeah, that's correct. And it's been one of the biggest things that she's been doing in the 6 years she's been in the role. So in 2012, the government introduced the Draft Communications Data Bill, which were plans to outline how emails, phone calls and internet use would be monitored in this country. The plans were very controversial. They were criticised by a lot of different people, and eventually they were blocked by Nick Clegg and the Liberal Democrats. So they were failed, they didn't come out, and then Theresa May has actually pushed these forward with some new plans this year, which we've talked about quite a lot on the podcast. And
you did just call them the Liberal Democrats, which is fine. It's fine. We'll move on. We'll move on. So now she's in power, she'll have a lot more power over who she appoints to run this legislation, to push it through Parliament, and it's probably going to come into force by the end of this year, but there's going to be a lot of debate before that happens.
Yeah, so the Investigatory Powers Bill, which is in the House of Lords at the moment, it's already gone through the House of Commons, and it's being debated by the Lords, and it should be done by the end of the year, but Theresa May, as the Prime Minister now, will actually be able to appoint the people who oversee the surveillance and who should be surveilled and who should be monitored in this country.
Yeah, we'll take a very strange segue to legal highs, because this was another very big bit of legislation that she pushed through while she was Home Secretary. So the Psychoactive Substances Bill, what was that and what did it change?
So this bill came into force in April this year. It was passed in January, and it's been quite a controversial one again. And it basically bans legal highs and anything that consists of a psychoactive substance. There's quite a lot of debate at the time about what the actual term of a psychoactive psychoactive substance is, but they can now be seized by police and they can be destroyed, and police can basically prosecute people who are using what are effectively legal highs.
So the idea was that so many new drugs are developed and put on the market, and you can buy them online really, really easily, and it's impossible for the legislation to keep up with these new substances. So the government has come up with this really broad catch-all where anything that's psychoactive is banned.
Yeah, basically.
And that's controversial.
That is quite controversial. So one scientist, an academic from the University of Lancaster, Karenza Moore, wrote earlier this year, and she was not alone in voicing her views on this sort of opinion, that it's the latest in a line of poorly drafted drug policies. So there's been a lot of controversial stuff around it because, as well, drugs are and legal highs, or what can be considered legal highs, are being used in some sort of academic research, medical research, by doctors and academics looking at curing health problems,
We've had two people come on the podcast, LSD and magic mushrooms, to very, very intelligently explain how they could be viable treatments for all sorts of conditions. And I think there's a sense amongst the medical community and the scientific community that politicians aren't listening to expert advice when it comes to legislating against drugs, and that this bill is a really, really bad example of that. So an interesting track record, and one that will have a lot of people concerned now that she's Prime Minister, but remains to be seen exactly which way she goes with her new policies.
It does, and she has been in the role, and she's been a politician for a long time. She's very experienced. She gets a lot of stuff pushed through. These two laws, even though they've been controversial, they are going to be passed and have been passed. So it is, she's very efficient and does her job. So it's just, if people don't agree with it, is there that option there for communication and transparency and just discussion around these areas? I think that's one of the big issues.
Which is the problem with the Snoopers Charter in the past and all this surveillance stuff. Matt Reynolds, there's one other bit of Theresa May-related news that we reported this week, which is also kind of concerning.
Yeah, absolutely. So the news is that the Department for Energy and Climate Change, which was responsible for securing and promoting clean energy in the UK and securing international action on climate change, has been abolished. It's been merged, actually, with the Department for Business, Innovation and Skills. So the new department is called the Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy. It's going to be headed up by
Greg Clark. I'll help you out there.
Not Craig. Greg Clark, who formerly was the Secretary of State for Communities and Local Government.
Does this show that the government isn't taking climate change seriously, that they've effectively gotten rid of quite an important government department, especially in the wake of the Paris Agreement, which was seen as a key milestone?
Yeah, perhaps it is quite worrying, because the remit of the Business, Innovation and Skills Department was all about promoting economic growth. So that's the main concern. And I think it is quite concerning that these two elements have been brought together. We've still got an environment secretary, so you know, it might be that climate issues become pushed to her. It's really hard to see how this will happen, but it is obviously quite worrying these two things have been merged, because they seem to be reasonably independent and before had been treated as such.
Yep, it's concerning times and confusing times at an awful lot of confusion and concern. Our third story this week is also about conservation and the climate. A few weeks ago, I spoke to some conservationists about a gorilla subspecies that is being pushed towards extinction in quite an unusual and really horrible way. The grouse gorilla, it's the world's largest primate, closely related to the mountain gorilla, is being hunted to the brink of extinction for bushmeat by miners working deep in the forests of the Democratic Republic of Congo. They're illegal mines, they're very, very difficult to find, and its population has fallen 77% in the last two decades, and there are now fewer than 4,000 left in the wild, which is just really, really crazy depressing. It's someone needs to answer questions.
And go on.
Yeah. Otherwise I just stand there talking forever.
Yeah, but you're good at
I'll
that.
I'll jump in.
I know, but it sounds weird. Its numbers have fallen 77% in the last two decades, with fewer than 4,000 now remaining, which is amazingly depressing.
But what does mining have to do with this?
Yeah, so as I said, the mines are very small and very deep in the forest. So these will often be run by armed militias and rebels and the local community needes to make money. There'll often be young men that need to get money for school or medical care for their families. So they'll work in the mines for very short amounts of time. And it's an incredibly tough life. they're mining for things like tantalite and gold and coltan. Sorry, coltan is the same thing as tantalite, tin and tungsten. And there's no villages nearby. There's no infrastructure nearby. So the only option that they have to survive is to kill stuff in the forest. And it just so happens that these very, very endangered gorillas are really easy to hunt. They spend most of the time on the ground. They move in very large groups. And they'll fight you if you try and shoot them. The silverback will often charge at you. So you've got a pretty good chance of catching one of them and having quite a substantial meal. It's not something that an awful lot of people know about. And they want to change that.
And what are people doing to combat this bushmeat eating?
Yeah, so I was speaking to the World Conservation Society, and they're calling for bushmeat-free to be included alongside conflict-free. So conflict-free is probably something that we're a lot more familiar with. This is the idea that mines that provide the minerals for technology, like smartphones or even aeroplanes and cars, these minerals have to be certified as coming from mines that don't rely on armed rebels, militias that aren't destroying communities and destroying people's lives. So adding bushmeat free to that would make sense, because then you'd know that it really is completely clean, the stuff that's making it into your phone or your car or your aeroplane or even your jewelry, because some of these mines are going after gold as well.
So this really needs big companies who are producing these sort of things to actually stop or make a pledge to say that they're not going to include this materials like this where they've come from dubious sources.
And then it needs the infrastructure to back that up. So part of the problem is that these mines, for all intents and purposes, don't exist because they're so small. They can often pop up and disappear within a matter of a few months. And they're so deep inside the rainforest where people just don't go that they can exist undetected. And once those minerals make it into the global supply chain, they're anonymous. They're not attached to any particular mine. So creating this infrastructure and this protection network that ensures that these mines are shut down or at least known about, and then we can make sure that those minerals don't end up in the global supply chain. But it's incredibly dangerous work. Conservationists and park rangers working for the DRC government are regularly shot at and killed, dozens over the last few years. It's an incredibly, incredibly difficult thing. So at the moment, conservationists are lobbying technology companies to try and make them more aware of this issue. I think we're all now very aware of conflict-free. It might not impact what we buy, but people will understand the term and they know things like blood diamonds. But think again when you're buying a piece of technology. Did a beautiful gorilla, essentially this is cannibalism, was it killed in order to feed someone who was desperately hungry, working a horrible job for barely any money? And it's all kinds of depressing. So it could go extinct within a decade, which is definitely something to think about. I'll ask you all, do you think about these kind of things when you're buying a smartphone? I mean, or even anything, any piece of technology?
Honestly, no. I don't think it really factors into most people's... I mean, I don't think people are aware of it, really. It's not something that's covered that widely. It's not something that most people are aware of, I don't think.
Yeah, and particularly when these kind of things are hidden away in... sort of corporate responsibility documents and PDFs on company websites hidden way away. There are very, very few companies that make big pay on the fact that their products are really good for the people that make them, that they're conflict-free, that they're bushmeat-free. There's one company, Fairphone, that makes a really, really big deal that apparently everything it sources is from the fairest systems that it can find in the world, but there are plenty of really big industrial companies and technology companies that do abide by all the laws and all the regulations, but don't necessarily go the extra mile and make that a real key selling point. So would it influence anyone else's?
The problem is I think even if people did realise that this was going on, I mean, when you to scale it right down, when people buy eggs, whether they're free-range eggs or not, a lot of the time it comes down to price. So there are people out there who will go, do you know what, I would prefer the hens to be looked after, but I can't afford or I don't want to pay the extra amount for those free-range eggs. And I think that, so then when you scale it back up again, people will look at that and go, well, I just want the best phone. I want the best technology. I want it at a price I want to pay for it. So it doesn't really matter where it came from. I think even if people are aware of it, I don't necessarily think they would stop buying it.
Yeah, which is why regulations and things need to be introduced to force companies to work this into their business model somehow. And this is what conservationists are calling for more and more of, to make it better and better. And it has gotten better. Some experts I spoke to said that over the last 6 years, it has become immeasurably more possible to track a mineral from source at smelter all the way through down the supply chain to the product that you end up buying or the piece of machinery that a company ends up building. So it is getting there, but it's very, very slow progress. And for a gorilla subspecies that few people even know about, that could go extinct very much within our lifetime, time is running out, and it's not really something that can take too much longer. So you can read about that on Wired UK. In fact, you can read about all these stories on Wired UK. Something you can read a lot of on Wired UK.
And Pokemon everywhere
and everywhere else. It has taken over the internet. In fact, Wired was even on the BBC 6 o'clock news last night playing it. Pokemon Go. Yep. Everyone's downloaded it. In fact, part of the reason why we've crammed 5 people into the podcast room is because everyone's really excited about Pokemon Go. Everyone.
Even me.
Yeah.
Even me.
Even everyone. Yep. Even Oliver Franklin Wallace. But not Roland. Anyway, Matt Reynolds, resident Pokemon master.
He loves Pokemon.
Take us through this quickly.
I do love Pokemon, so I can vouch for that. So essentially, why is a big deal? Why are we talking about it today? Pokemon Go was released in the UK yesterday. Becomes the 5th country in the world to get it after the States, Australia, New Zealand and Germany. In case you don't know what it is, it's essentially an augmented reality game. You roam around in the real world. Yeah, Emily, you have to get up and move physically in
that
the real world.
Sounds horrible.
I know. New type of gaming. And you'll come across Pokemon in the real world, capture them by pointing your camera at it, your smartphone camera, and flicking a Pokeball. And you capture it, and then you can battle it in gyms. You can collect items from Pokestop. So I know a lot of us in the room were brought up with Pokemon. Not with Pokemon, but with the game Pokemon.
My sister was a Jigglypuff.
Yeah, brought up by Pokemon. I think it's really captured the imagination and the enthusiasm of lots of people.
And how? Statistics.
Yeah, statistics. So this is kind of an odd one because I had this game. It was released yesterday. I've had it over a week, though, because it's been pretty easy to get it a few different ways on iOS or Android. So these statistics figures, they're big. They probably don't reflect how big the game is. In the States, there are 21 million daily active Pokemon Go users. That actually puts it on par or perhaps even above the number of daily active Twitter users.
And Tinder, I think.
Yeah, and Tinder. There's been more downloads more downloads of Pokemon Go than of Tinder. It's installed on 10 million Android devices, and every day Pokemon Go users are spending about 43 minutes on the app.
Actually, what are you doing? That's nowhere near enough.
I know. You need to be having it on every single... But 43 minutes might be the only battery time.
I think Matt Reynolds is pushing up that number, though.
Yep. Yeah. You've always got to... I've got a lot of eggs to hatch,
Me too.
And one of the biggest numbers, most surprising numbers, Nintendo only has a third stake in the company behind this, which is called the Pokemon Company, but the game developer that made it are called Niantic. It still boosted Nintendo's market value by £6 billion. That's just 2 days after it was released.
Most of that is me buying lures to bring Pokemon to my home so I don't have to move.
Terrible, terrible. And that's fairly stupid, but some people have done even stupider things in pursuit of being the best there ever was.
Yeah, so a man, this happened today or yesterday, I think, a man in New Zealand has quit his job to find every single Pokemon.
That's good luck, mate.
So stupid.
Yeah, exactly. So he's going to spend, I think he says he's going to spend 2 months on a tour in New Zealand. He's got to find all 151 Pokemon in the game. So,
Why does he have to talk? Why can't he just stay in one place?
Because to catch them is his true quest and to save them is his goal.
Exactly. And you might have to go to the sea to get a water Pokemon. So he's got to go to the appropriate places. Slightly darker. Pokemon Go has been used by armed robbers in America and in Australia to lure players to be robbed. Obviously, you can set a lure on a Pokestop, and that means there's going to be loads of awesome Pokemon come to the area. And it so happens that with Pokemon come people with their faces down on their iPhones or Android devices, loosely gripped in their hands.
Not a good idea, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Pokemon safely.
Yeah, so that's
that applies to the next headline as well.
Yeah, and this next headline is two California men that fell off the edge of an ocean bluff.
I think it's also important to note that yesterday our editor, Victoria Willison, also fell in the street whilst we were playing Pokemon Go.
It's a real problem for real people. An ocean bluff is like a little bit of a cliff.
Yeah, apparently they fell about 60 feet down a kind of like shallow cliff.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Did they get any good water Pokemon? Was it worth it?
Honestly, that was the question that people should have been asking, but we don't know.
We need to find this out.
There have also been two dead bodies found thanks to Pokemon Go. Obviously, the great thing is
didn't die playing Pokemon Go.
No, they didn't. They didn't die playing Pokemon Go, but they were found by people playing Pokemon Go. Obviously, because you have to get out, and the best Pokemon are probably going to be in a slightly out of the way area. Just so happens that you also put dead bodies in places that people aren't likely to go. So
Emily, this nicely links to your experience of playing Pokemon Go.
I haven't discovered any dead bodies.
And dissolved them in an alkaline solution and flushed them down the toilet.
Yeah. No, I would dispose of them responsibly in an environmentally friendly way.
Absolutely. But my point was that it gets you up and about and it's getting people socialising, and there's been some slightly dubious headlines about it helping people with depression.
Yeah, I think these have been more kind of like first person things, but there's been quite a lot of stuff I've read on Twitter and on different websites about how Pokemon Go is actually helping people with their mental health, which might sound slightly spurious, but if you're very depressed, you might not want to leave the house for a long time, you might, you know, not want to move, you're really depressed, but playing Pokemon Go gives people an excuse to go and have a walk and get out of the house, which
and
can
get
obviously
neck ache by looking down the whole time.
Well, it's better than just lying in bed being depressed, I guess.
Yeah, you could fall off a curb and hurt your knee.
I have to say, it hasn't solved any of my mental health problems, but I'm sure if I continue playing it then I will be completely cured within a few weeks.
Yeah, but have you got a really good Pokemon yet? Because that could
solve
everything.
Well, I don't actually know, because I never played Pokemon as a child because I had no sense of fun or humor as a child or as an adult. So I don't know which Pokemon are good. I just go by, oh, that one's cute. And if it's not cute, then I don't bother.
Matt Reynolds, I hear rumor that your girlfriend is a better Pokemon master than even you.
I can confirm.
Well, my girlfriend, I wanted to be a team in Pokemon. So you choose from one of three teams, yellow, red, blue, and then that's how you kind of battle gyms. Taylor, my girlfriend, didn't want to be on the same team as me. But she does want to use me to try and battle down a gym's prestige, and she'll sneak in and take it. So I, you know, wholeheartedly disagree that
this is
most
of
the words you're saying don't make any sense.
This is going to be Pokemon Go's first breakup, I think.
Yeah, I mean,
and we will write about it on Wired UK.
Yeah, I would like to be used as an anecdote, my heartbreak as an anecdote for Pokemon Go.
It's good for clicks. Matt Burgess, you didn't get to join in the Pokemon Go fun yesterday because you were on a train.
Yeah, I've been really annoyed by this. All you lot went out and played Pokemon in the street, walked around, bumped into people, fell over, caused chaos. And I was sat on a train trying to refresh this app or have it running all the time and open and find any Pokemon around me. But there weren't any. The train was going too fast to even like locate any Pokemon. I tried to find some at train stations. I nearly missed getting off the train. but it's been a pretty disappointing 24 hours for me.
But I did find out this morning that once you have an egg and it's in an incubator, if you're on a bus, mm-hmm. that counts towards the kilometres that you need to travel in order to hatch that egg.
So you don't even need to walk.
I hatched an egg this morning on the bus.
it's a ridiculous
sentence.
Which is
a weird sentence. That sentence sounds quite viscerally horrible. But no, I hatched an egg in the app Pokemon Go.
Congratulations on your
child. But
I
didn't even have to walk anywhere.
What was the egg?
I can't remember, but I remember thinking, oh no, it was the fish that I can't remember the name
Magikarp.
No, it was the sexy...
Goldeen.
It was the sexy fish, not the fish that's on its side.
Goldeen?
Possibly. The sexier one.
We'll move on. If anyone knows the name of that sexy fish Pokemon. Slightly embarrassingly, I may or may not have taken a detour on my way into work to catch a Pokemon, but it was worth it because I ended up standing on a street corner in Mayfair, which is quite a well-to-do, fancy part of London where people are normally deadly serious and quite po-faced. And there were a small group of people going, ooh, Poliwag. And we all called a Poliwag, and it was a lovely moment in the sunshine.
That's
and it made
beautiful.
The world a better place. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? It's just become so big so quickly, and it's been fun.
It's really fun. I've never, ever played Pokemon in my life. And when you all... There's quite a few Pokemon fans in the team, James Temperton and Matt Reynolds, to be precise, or Nintendo fans generally. And whenever they were talking about it, it was completely going over my head. So I'm editing these stories with words that I don't actually know what they mean. And I'm having to... I'm asking if I can change a headline. Is this still accurate? Because I don't actually know what it's saying. But I've downloaded it now, and I am absolutely addicted to it, to the fact that I did fall over and cut my knee.
How is your knee?
It's getting there.
Was it worth it?
It wasn't worth it.
None of it is worth it.
Because I wasn't even playing at the time. I was doing a Facebook Live of other people playing, so I had no Pokemons to benefit from.
You suffer for your art.
It's a sad tale.
Yeah. And I think we're going to cut the podcast short there. Well, not short. It's actually gone a bit long. So we can go and catch more Pokemon and have Emily's goodbye lunch. So
goodbye.
Yes, goodbye.
Bye.
So Emily, it's
bye,
your last
guys.
Podcast. Would you like to tell people what you're going off to do, or do you want to keep it a secret?
There's nothing exciting. That makes it sound exciting, but I'm actually just going to move to Berlin to be a freelancer and write my second book.
Nice plug. La 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 la.
And you can pre-order the first one on Amazon now.
Yeah, okay, you're allowed that. We'll allow that.
Thanks.
All right, well, it's been a pleasure, and the podcast has also been a pleasure this week. It's been good to get everyone crammed into a very warm room. We're off to go and catch some Pokemon. Go and do the same. Don't walk into any lampposts. Don't walk off any bluffs. Don't get mugged. Stay safe. Become Pokemon masters. We will see you all again next week. Apart from Emily, we'll see you again never.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.